Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I am your host, Dan Eastman, and today is Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. Thank you for tuning in today. We always appreciate your viewership and thank you for watching WVW-TV. We pride ourselves in being able to bring alternative thought and alternative viewpoints to the marketplace of ideas. And as we compete with the mainstream media and their giant funding and all of the process involved in a national media, it's great to know that you can watch alternative viewpoints. And as you know, you can watch our viewpoints here for free because you don't have to subscribe and there's no paywall. We are very happy to be able to bring this content to you. And of course, we've been bringing it to the American public and the world since 2006. So thank you so much for tuning in. As you know, we're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercials to advertisers, but we do survive on gifts, donations, and sponsorship. And we'd like to thank all of you who watch these programs and send some donation to the foundation. It's always appreciated. We also thank our sponsors for helping us keep the programming on the air. Of course, the sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading. And as I like to say, it's a fine purveyor of precious metals. They're based in Arizona and it's an American company. And they sell precious metals. So if you're interested in adding to your individual portfolio, where you thought maybe I'll buy some precious metals as an inflation hedge or for whatever reason, you would want to find a strong partner in that space that you can call or order online and you get what you pay for and the quality's there. And Swiss America has been doing this a very long time. It's a quality vendor of precious metal products. And certainly if you're looking for a vendor or if you're looking to just add to your personal holdings, give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you and they'll be happy to send you some free information. They're also running a special right now, $13.50 for the silver, the Liberty half dollars, and that includes shipping to your home or her office, and that's quite a bargain. So if you're following the silver prices at all, and you're thinking about adding some silver to your holdings, you should give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, and take advantage of that offer if you feel that product is right for you. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around and you can see what they have. And if you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, if you use the promo code Eastman, they'll honor that $13.50 per coin special, and you can also see what else they have, and you can get free information as well. So either give them a call or go to the website and take advantage of that deal, because it's capped at 250 coins per person, and it's only available until they run out. So if you want to see if there's still some left, maybe give them a call or go online. And keep in mind, silver coins are kind of neat for gift giving during the holidays. It's something that you can give someone that will last forever and has intrinsic value and will not end up in a landfill unless they're accidentally thrown out with the wrapping paper. But we'd like to think that giving a gift of permanence is kind of a neat idea. So as gift giving season begins, maybe give it a thought. At $12.50, that's a pretty reasonable price for something that has traditionally, for thousands of years, held its value quite well. So anyway, thank you so much, Swiss America, for sponsoring, and please give them a call or go online and check them out, because they're a great company to do business with. Well, let's jump into the news today, and of course, we're still there are reverberations and continuing problems with respect to the Israel situation, and that does tend to dominate the news cycle. I mean, although the politicians are voicing their opinions, and of course, all the different factions are coming out loudly with their viewpoints as well. And again, keep all of the people in that part of the world in your prayers, because it's a very complicated situation. And this is certainly a horrific, horrific example of how madness unleashed becomes just a terrifying and deadly experience. And you think about the innocent people that were going about their daily lives in Israel when the dam burst. It's tragic. It's beyond tragic. It's disastrous for humanity. So keep them in your prayers and pray that the solutions that come forward are are reasonable. So anyway, that is dominating the news, but there is economic news, and I want to kind of dovetail in, and probably everybody's watching the Israeli situation news, but for those paying attention to finance, thank you for watching. I want to talk about, and I mentioned this yesterday, but I want to talk more about Secretary Janet Yellen, because she's made some comments recently that are very important. And as I pointed out yesterday, you know, it's in politics, it's always, you know, fun to like your team and, you know, fun to not like the other side. But there are people in finance who have spent their entire lives at very high levels. And whether you like Janet Yellen or President Biden or not, it doesn't matter, because when she speaks, she has a lifetime of very detailed information and knowledge about the global economy, the American economy, the American monetary system. And whether you like her or not, when she speaks, it's like the old commercial for the stockbroker, when Smith Barney or whoever it was speaks and people listen. Well, that's kind of what I do with Janet Yellen, because there have been great Fed chairmen in the past. And, you know, from time to time, Arthur Burns and some of the great, you know, intellectuals within the space, the finance and economic space. And she is certainly as astute as any of them. So when she speaks, it's important to listen, because she says things, and what she says have meaning. And apparently she got caught saying last week that the debt service of the United States government is now 1% of the GDP. Now, let me stop and break that sentence down, okay? Because it's important for our critical thinking and the development of critical thinking skills. We see a headline or we see a statement, and it shouldn't go in one ear and out the other. It should stop and read it and think about what that means. Now, let's take my model again of the national economy. Okay, that's the private businesses and all of us, we the peoples, who are in business and making goods and services and selling them, and we, many of us, most of us participate in that process as employees and labor. You either own a business or you work for somebody, and even working for somebody is your own business, is a self, you know, you are a sole proprietor, but you're revenue source is your paycheck. Okay, so this is the private sector, and that is what the GDP, gross domestic product, is. Now there are economists that will say, "Hey, but you forgot about government." Well, let me just again. I think I do this five times a week. We have this ball. This is like this orb of mist, and within this misty ball is all of the businesses, from your local dry cleaner and coffee shop to General Motors and everybody in between, Apple computers, all that stuff. And of course, all of us who work and earn a living, whether we have a shoe cobbler and you make money as a sole practice shoe cobbler or a sole practice lawyer, which is probably less lucrative, or you work as the CEO of Apple or whatever, we're all in this national income. It's a thing. It's like if you look at a swamp, it's just teeming with life. Okay, there's bacteria, there's frogs and all this stuff. Well, that's the same thing with our national economy. And what economists do is you measure the GDP, because you want it growing to have a growing society. And, you know, a rising tide floats all boats. A growing economy helps everybody within it. Now, you could dissect that down to President Reagan's trickle-down theory. It's more of a misty cloud theory. The bigger the economy, the better off everybody is. And that's what we measure, as gross domestic product, GDP. It used to be gross national product, GNP, but they fiddled with the equation. But the point is, you've got this big ball of economic activity. And this would happen if there was like a nuclear holocaust, and we were all back to the caveman days, and there was no technology, there's no nothing, there would still be a ball of economics going on. It'd be a little ball. It'd be trading, you know, I'll trade you this stick for that stone, but it would be small. Well, with technology and human advancement, that ball has gotten to be rather large, okay? So when we look at the GDP of a nation, and let's just say the United States, the GDP of the United States, what Secretary Yellen was saying is that the federal government, its debt service is now 1% of that giant ball, that cloud of mist, okay, the national economy. You think, well, what's 1%? What's 1%? That's nothing. That's nothing. And in essence, it is a relatively small number. And, you know, when you think about it, and that's one of the reasons the arguments against the Keynesian idea that, you know, the GDP is, you know, 40% the government. Well, it's not. You get this big ball, and then you have this government that has one authority under our Constitution, and frankly, in other countries as well, is that they have the ability. We the people have conveyed onto our government a privilege to tax the cloud, the ball, okay? And we tax that and pull some of that money out of this ball, and we set it over here, and then there's this altruistic public good idea that says we will take some money out of the ball. And of course, the people in the ball don't want their money taken by anybody. We have, you know, criminal statutes that says if you come to my house and steal my TV, you get to go to jail. You know, we don't want that. That's theft. But the government is given a privilege that we will come together and we will debate the public good. Should we have a new highway? And I was just driving this morning. There's a great big new freeway going up through our county from you know, north of Milwaukee. It's heading up toward Green Bay, and it's a mess. And it's just the construction constraints, and everybody's angry, road rage and stuff. But when you look at that interstate highway, you think, well, this is really going to be nice when it's done, you know? So I'm miserable for 2 years while they're building it. But at some point, I mean, this is going to be like floating along on a carpet of concrete in luxury. It's going to be great. Well, that's the privilege that we, the people, have given our government to meet in Congress, okay, and debate what would be good for the people, and then go into the big ball of economic mist and take some money out. And you pass a law to do that. There has to be political consensus. And of course, the big ball would prefer, stay out of here. We're having a great old time, laissez-faire economy. We don't need, you know, we don't need public goods. Well, we've come to this balance, okay? So we now have this consensual consensual government that has a taxing authority, and it taxes and takes the money out and builds this nice interstate highway through my town. And of course, we've got an airport, and we have a post office, and we got, you know, all sorts of government buildings and lots of people. And it's we have grown this into a rather refined government that has the ability to now take like half or 40, 35, what are the top rates, 35, 38%, whatever it is. They take a lot of money out and they spend it on the public good, okay? And that's to make all of our lives collectively better. I don't usually use the word collective because I'm a capitalist, but the idea is if you take this some money out of the cloud and you put it into my nice highway that I benefit because I drive on it every day, I'm happy. Okay. I say, well, I'm not happy I paid taxes, but I'm happy I have a nice airport. I'm happy I have a nice highway. I'm happy I have nice government workers that whatever they do all day, I'm sure there's some merit to their efforts. So the point is you create a society that is bigger than just the ball. Because if left to its own devices, the ball can become a rather nasty place because it's purely competitive. If you let humans to their lowest common denominator, their man's sinful human condition, okay, then it becomes a rather kill or be killed environment. So we've got this all set up, okay? And this is our government, and it works with my little municipality. We have a nice library, they got a public pool, and what else do they have? Well, they plow the roads, which is important in winter, and we have a very good police department and a very good fire department, and we have some parks, and it's nice, you know. And then you pay your money, and it's a nice place to live. Plus, it's nice to know you can pick up the phone and call the police, or you can call the fire department, and the same thing at the county level and the state level. So we've got all of this going on, and this is the idea is to spend this money out of the ball. Okay, first of all, you regulate the ball so people don't destroy each other, which is what regulation's all about. And then you take the money out of the ball and you make it nice. So the ball has a better economy to function, or excuse me, a better infrastructure in which to function. If you're a business that transports goods, not only am I going to be happy cruising along on my interstate, but there's going to be a lot of trucks. It's going to be a lot easier to haul your goods from point A to point B. It's going to be easier for workers to get to their jobs and back home again. It's just going to be better. Same thing with a big commercial airport. We're lucky in Milwaukee to have a pretty good size commercial airport. I mean, it's right up there. It's, you know, it's, I don't know, about 50, 60 miles away from O'Hare in Chicago, which is monstrous. But, you know, flying to Mitchell Field in Milwaukee, it's because we have that, this is a place where people like to live and do business. So that's the point. So I know this is a long digression from what Janet Yellen said about 1%, but when you think about, that's how government is supposed to work. It provides goods and it provides services and infrastructure for we the people. And then, of course, there's the social component as well. And sometimes people wonder about, what should government be in the food stamp business, or should government be in the, you know, help the poor business? And it's an interesting question. And I think when you look back as something of an economic historian, like I fancy myself to be, when you look at the American experience, you can't discount our historical relationship to England and the way the kings and queens of England set up their world in shires or counties, with the idea that the king had this, or the queen had this obligation from God to take care of the poor people. And this goes back to the divine right of kings, you know, as God's representative. Jesus is the King of Kings on the throne, and under Jesus are all the kings, you know, the crowned heads of Europe. Well, anyway, the idea was that there is a component that the counties are supposed to take care of the poor. And that is not just the American interpretation, but it goes way back into English history. As part of, after Magna Carta in 1066 was the Battle of Hastings. The point is, from Magna Carta in the 1200s through today, there has been this idea that the government has some obligation to take care of the poorest of the poor. So all of that is our government platform. And okay, we accept that. You come to America, become a citizen. Okay, look, I'm going to work hard and make a lot of money. The government's going to tax me, but I'm going to have a great highway to drive in. And, you know, that's the deal. Well, and I apologize for the long digression, but I want to get back to Secretary Yellen's comment that she's saying the debt service costs are 1% of the GDP. Okay, and so why is that important? Well, here's the thing. When you think about what is the debt service component of the federal budget, it's quite simply the amount of interest that the federal government pays on its outstanding debt. And we know it's $33 trillion. And we know they're going to spend another $2 trillion deficit spending. That's going to go from 33 to 35. And what Janet Yellen, Secretary Yellen, was pointing out is that the federal expenditure on interest, on its outstanding debt, and outstanding debt was sold, the money was spent, that was last year, the year before, 30 years ago, whenever they issued these bonds, you got this long, long history of debt going very, very high, and now we're spending $1.15 trillion on interest. Now, think about this from your perspective. Let's say this would be your household, okay? And if your minimum credit card payments, which are virtually mostly all debt, you pay down very little principal every month when you make your minimum card payment. Let's say that your credit card debt was higher than your paycheck. Okay, you would be in illiquid. You'd be underwater. There comes a point where you have spent so much money that you didn't have, you borrowed money to spend it. You have no assets to support the spending, and you have massive debt, and there's this huge debt service. Well, the problem with this at the federal government level is they're spending $1.15 trillion a year on interest. And that's, if you think about the highway that they're building through my town, $1.15 trillion. I mean, you could build a freeway from here to the North Pole. That's a lot of money. And every time they spend that on interest payments, what we're seeing is they're not spending it on interstate highways. They're not improving airports. They're not improving the ports where the ships come in and drop off all the stuff from China. They're not spending it on welfare programs. They're not feeding the poor. They're not spending it even on our military. They're spending that money and they're paying it to the people who have lent the United States government $33 or $35 trillion. So what it does is it puts this tremendous burden on the taxpayers to pay into the system. We do our taxes on April 15th and we send our checks off to the IRS and they collect the taxes. And what we've known looking at this over the months is that the tax collections that from the IRS, that their job is to go collect the taxes, the tax revenues are dramatically shorter than the federal spending. That's why we have the $2 trillion deficit. They're short by $2 trillion. So it's not just here's the ball, let's take some money and spend it. It's here's the ball, let's take some money and spend it. And we'll borrow a bunch of money and spend that too. And that goes back to the classic Adam Smith model of, supply and demand, equilibrium, tax and spend. And then you could argue that the ball would be able, it would be the GDP, but if you tax it and spend it, well, that gets added right back in. So the size of the ball doesn't change due to government action. Here with borrowing, it's changing. And what they're doing is they're basically taking $1.15 trillion that they could be spending on roads and airports and buildings and government employees and people who are helping others. And they're spending it and they're just paying interest. And this is a real problem because what Secretary Yellen was saying here is that this is not sustainable. You cannot have annual interest payments at the level where it's 1% of the GDP for just the government, which is supposed to be like a 5% of GDP. You can't have that level of spending because it's sucking up all the money. And then I don't have money to pay the army and the military. I don't have money to build, finish the highway running through Eastman's backyard here. I don't have the money. So what do? You go and issue more bonds, okay? And you grow the debt. And you increase it. So what you're trying to do is borrow your way out of a cash pinch. And she is pointing out that this is not sustainable. Okay, well, that's interesting. So what? Well, so what is this? If you think about what she's saying and she's telegraphing, and trust me, Janet Yellen does not go walking around town or speaking at luncheons and say stupid things. She is not a stupid person. She's very wise. And when she's saying this stuff, what she's telling you is that interest rates are too high. They have to come down. We have to lower the amount of federal dollars going to the debt service, or we're going to be taking every dollar that the IRS can squeeze out of the economy and pay for money we spent in the past. And there will be no tax dollars to fund anything else. What do I do? I've got to spend all this money. I have to sell more bonds. I have to keep growing the debt to cover the gap, to cover the spending, because all the tax money that's being collected in the United States is going to pay the interest on money I already spent, or it's been spent since the 1970s. This is a real problem. And the prognosticators, or the soothsayers, or when you got the crystal ball and you're trying to predict the future, that's what financial analysts do. That's how they get paid. You try to figure out what's going to happen, 30 minutes from now. Well, what it tells you is the pressure to cut interest rates is growing exponentially as the United States government continues to spend crazy amounts of money that they're not collecting from the ball. They're just borrowing it from other people. Because keep in mind, this is our GDP. This is our ball, okay? Germany's got a ball, England's got a ball, China's got a ball, Japan's got a ball. what they're basically doing is borrowing from other people's balls and spending that money because we are maxed out. And this becomes a really, really interesting situation for those. And I don't give financial advice, and I'm not a financial analyst, but I'll tell you one thing, this is an unsustainable situation. And Secretary Yellen has pointed that out, that we cannot continue to go forward with these high interest rates because you're bankrupt. Well, the federal government has bankrupted itself, but having high interest rates is causing some very serious problems. And we have to lower rates. Now, that's going to be great for, you know, people who want to buy homes, because housing has basically come to a grind because of the high mortgage rates. So if you cut the interest rates, you're going to pick up the housing market, and people are getting desperate, right? Now they're frantic because they missed it. You know, you missed the window. You owned nothing and were happy until you figured out that you were the one left behind. And now you're frantically trying to get into the housing market. Well, this will help the housing market. And there's nothing more pacifying and soothing to the American psyche than a robust and healthy housing market. And that's liquidity that people are simply out of. So that would be a real benefit. The second benefit is, if you lower the interest rates, you're going to lower the annual debt service requirements for the federal government and give the taxpayer breathing room. So there's a lot of pressure coming. And keep in mind, Secretary Yellen was the Fed chair prior to Powell. So she knows the fiscal policy and she knows the monetary policy. So when she's saying this, my gut tells me that you're going to start to see a rather rapid change in fiscal policy, and it's likely that interest rates are going to come down. And of course, if interest rates come down, the whole purpose of jacking them up was to stop inflation. So the question becomes, how do you stop inflation when the interest rates are being cut? And the answer is, you probably won't be able to do that. And at the end of the day, we have come to a point where we're going to see the interest rates have to be low, because it's the only way the federal government can keep spending. And there's just no discipline in Washington. I mean, we don't even know who's running the House of Representatives right now. And the House of Representatives holds the purse string of the American Treasury. Yeah, I think that purse slipped out of their hands about 50 years ago. So the point is this: when you're watching these people make these comments, I think it's really important to understand that this is a serious problem. And let me give you another quick example. The normal interest rate expense of the federal government was below $600 billion a year. Now, that's a lot of money, but that's manageable. I mean, some debt is practical. If you want to borrow money to put in a bridge, the bridge lasts 40, 50 years. That's just finance. But it was $600 billion a year in 2022. That was like last year. Okay. And unfortunately, now the interest rates, because the Fed was fiddling around and the market caught wind of it, and the market's pushing rates. And we just saw another Fed president today say, hey, you know, don't raise the rates. The market's doing that for us. This may be out of control. Well, now you've gone from $600 billion a year to $1.15 trillion a year. And it's sort of one of these parabolic curves, where it's kind of chugging along. Remember Al Gore came up with that screwy thing about the global warming? You know, it was like this, and there was a hockey stick. Well, this is a real one. This is a real one. If you look at the annual debt service of the United States, boing, it is a real problem. So I think this is an interesting, it's an interesting problem. But my gut tells me that as interest rates come down and the economy picks up additional steam, because, you know, man's human nature is two things that motivate the markets: greed and fear. Well, you know, as that big cloud of economic activity takes off, everybody's going to get their piece, and you're going to end up seeing inflation. So that might be a good reason to give old Swiss America a call. And, you know, the idea of inflation's coming, it's going to hurt the poor silo the worst. So anyway, I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow, but thank you so much for tuning in, and have a great afternoon. Bye.